is talk for a few minutes, and then I'll be showing slides, and then after the slides, I'd like to talk about family, your family albums, to see if this brings up any ideas or thoughts or insights into your own family albums and how you keep them and what their function is. Last time I talked about several artists' renderings of their own families. They were photographers who all devoted several years to the project of depicting their families, extended families and immediate families. In my art training in art school, it was always emphasized over and over that the photograph is a picture, that it's not a surrogate reality, that it's not a window on the world, it's an image, and it's an interpretation of reality. And every photograph is an interpretation of reality. I talked a little bit about how the technology of photography determines the way the pictures look, and consequently our view of the past and of our own identities. The point and shoot cameras that we use, we have a certain distance that will be in focus, and they limit the way our pictures look, the kind of camera we use. Kodak determines how saturated the color will be in the photograph. The photomat averages out the density of the negative and makes an interpretation of it into a print, and there are just zillions of different interpretations, different color, different ways of making the color look that they just average out and interpret for you. So a lot like early photographs where exposures were really long and people looked very rigid and very strained because they were holding themselves still for long exposures, our own snapshots too kind of have conventions. They're bound by the conventions of the technology that we use. The photograph is one person's interpretation of reality. It's filtered through the technology that you're using, like from the 8x10 camera that Nick Nixon used to photograph his children, photographs I showed before, to the video camera now, which is really changing the way our family is recorded. This is a picture by Julia Margaret Cameron from the 19th century, and I showed a lot of her work the other day. Art photographers, photographers whose work is shown in the art world, in the galleries, in the museums, have contributed a complex view of the family that conventional family photographs, like the conventional studio portrait, or even our snapshots, don't tend to get at. They give us clues about how we might expand our own ways of picturing the family. They let us in on emotionally charged moments. They can evoke the transitoriness of experience. This is a picture by Harry Callahan of his wife and daughter out in Lake Michigan, in Chicago. They can distill and magnify the fears we've felt for our children, for our loved ones. They can be metaphors for transformation, like this one by VPR, of a child as a bird. They can connect us with grand themes, like Sally Mann wrote about her work. The work connects us with anger, love, death, sensuality, and beauty. They spin a story, they create a fiction, they tell truths told slant, as Emily Dickinson put it, but they also, what they do, I think, is put us in touch with the complexity of the family and the emotional life of the family. We know in our heads that these are only pictures. They're interpretations of reality. They're one version. But in fact, that's not how family pictures really function in our lives. The photograph has a direct connection to the person. He or she was there, and the light reflected off of that person, and it was fixed on the film. And that makes it much more compelling for us when we look at our family pictures. It's a trace of that person, and for that reason, there were aspects of the pictures that I showed the other day that I talked about with several people now, Sally Mann's photographs, that were very troubling. That if there were paintings or drawings, they wouldn't have been so troubling. The photographs sometimes seem to be violating boundaries. Photographers were violating boundaries in their art by making use of their children as objects while spinning out their own vision of childhood and family dynamics. In the family album, our sort of intellectual knowledge about the photograph being an interpretation of reality falls away, I think. And we can look at the picture and say, there she is, or there he is. It's you know, even though we know that it's just an interpretation. The French philosopher Roland Barthes, who most of his career said that there is no self, there is no continuous self, we're just fragmented and constantly changing. Even he, after his mother died, and when he was looking through a shoebox of photographs, looking for a photograph of his mother that would sort of, you know, remind him of her, he even said, there she is. He felt like he found her essence. And he, through his whole career, he said, there is no such thing as the self, the essence of the self. He says, there I was, alone in the apartment where she had died, looking at these pictures of my mother, one by one, under the lamp, gradually moving back in time with her, looking for the truth of the face I had loved, and I found it. The photograph was very old. The corners were blunted from having been pasted into an album. The sepia print had faded, and the picture just managed to show two children standing together at the end of a little wooden bridge in a glassed-in conservatory, what was called the Winter Garden in those days. My mother was 5 at the time, 1898, her brother 7. He was leaning against the bridge railing, along which he had extended one arm. She, shorter than he, was standing a little back, facing the camera. You could tell that the photographer had said, step forward a little so we can see you. She was holding one finger in the other hand, as children often do, in an awkward gesture. The brother and sister, united, as I knew, by the discord of their parents, who were soon to divorce, had posed side by side, alone, under the palms of the Winter Garden. And then he talks about studying the photograph and scrutinizing it and being frustrated, too, by it not being able to tell him what he wanted to know exactly, but also, there she is. He had found her essence. So I think, you know, the way the photograph does actually function in the family album is to be that. Another point that Barthes makes about the photograph is the way that it makes us aware of death. He describes a photograph by Gardner, Alexander Gardner, that was made in 1865. In 1865, young Louis Payne, this is a photograph, tried to assassinate Secretary of State W.H. Seward. Alexander Gardner photographed him in his cell where he was waiting to be hanged. The photograph is handsome, as is the boy. That is the studium, which is his sort of cultural interest in the photograph, he calls the studium. But the punctum is what he describes as the sort of, the way the photograph touches you, the wound of the photograph almost. The punctum is, he is going to die. I read at the same time, this will be, and this has been. I observe with horror an anterior future of which death is the state. By giving me the absolute past of the pose, the photograph tells me death in the future. What pricks me is the discovery of this equivalence. In front of the photograph of my mother as a child, I tell myself she is going to die. I shudder, like Winnicott's psychotic patient, over a catastrophe which has already occurred. Whether or not the subject is already dead, every photograph is this catastrophe. And that's what makes the photograph so poignant, I think. So this person has been, this person is going to die or has died. When we look at the Sally Mann photograph of her daughter or of her children, we're aware of their vulnerability. We're partly, you know, sensing in on some level what they're going to experience, what they're going to face. And we can imagine on some level what they will face, and death is something that they'll face. So I want to show you an album that my mother put together, which has come to mean a lot more to me since I've been preparing for this. It was an album that was around in our house that came out every once in a great while that I took for granted. And I took for granted the photograph of her brother that was always on the mantle or on the piano of him in his Air Force uniform. But it's been very emotional for me to look at this album again and think about how she constructed it and why. For her, this album is an autobiography, I think. It's that memories via snaps. It covers her life from her babyhood to her marriage. And here she is as a baby on mother's lap in the middle. And then she showed her younger sister. She grew up in northern Minnesota on the Iron Range. She was born in 1925. Her father worked for the mining company. She had, there were 8 children in the family, and she and her sister were there was a huge gap between her older sister and she and her younger sister. And this picture is really amazing to me. Here you see the shadow of my grandfather and my grandmother. And you'll see a picture of them later in the album where the shape of their heads, I mean, it's just remarkable to me, but also the fact that often family pictures are taken with the light coming from behind you and the photographer's shadow is there. And for me, that those shadows have so much more meaning than simply being shadows. It happened to be there because I look at her, you know, I know more about her childhood now and how they were in fact, you know, kind of, well, shadows in a way. I mean, they couldn't really be there for her completely and things like that, so. I'm not going to dwell on every picture, that's for sure, but I just wanted to give you a taste of what the album is like. She's at the center of it. She said that someone gave her this photo album and she, when she was a young girl, and she made it about herself. She picked out the pictures, which is different than a lot of family albums. Usually the parents construct it as the children are growing up, and here she put herself at the center. And when you look at a family album, I look at it in the light of the future. I mean, what I know about what happened to the future. That's why the Roland Barthes quote about the pain is so poignant to me. So the time sort of collapsed, and it becomes a different story for me than it was for her when she constructed it. But I ask questions when I look at it, like, you know, what were their relationships like? How close were they? How loving was their, what kind of relationships were there? What were their feelings for each other? You know, what happened to some of the people that I don't know in the album? And also, what did I inherit from it? And who am I in relation to this album? Okay, she says, up to here it's been me from 6 months to 5 years, not for school days. The Gilbert kindergarten kids that were in my class right there. This is interesting to me partly because the town where she grew up disappeared completely. They completely dismantled it because it was a mining town. Once the mine, they were done with the mine. They took the town away, so I can't go back to her childhood home. And so I can only imagine the space, the place from these pictures. One thing to think about in relation to your own family albums too is how much narrative how much text there is. There's very little text in this, and often there's an exclamation point. It's like, you know, yippee, school days. It's just, there's the kinds of things I'm gleaning from, the emotional things that I'm gleaning from the pictures are not in the text at all.
Was this close to Gibbing?
Yeah. It was called Elkhorn. It was very close to Everett and Gilbert. And she puts in the events that, you know, like her as Uncle Sam and the 4th of July parade. She's often pictured with her younger sister. This is the school pictures, the group pictures. And here she is in her classroom. She's the second from the left there. There are a lot of, you know, typical family shots. This one is interesting to me. She put in one of her blurred there. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, did she like the way she looked in that picture? You know, partly because of the softening and the blur. And here's a picture of her family at the Badlands. One that strikes me a lot. I think it's a beautiful photograph, for one thing. But she's here on the right. And she, I discovered as I've gotten older, was an outsider in her family. And her ally in the family was her brother, here. And he was killed in World War II, and that's where the album sort of ends at that point. But in this picture, everyone else, she's off on the side, looking in this direction.
Everyone else is looking in this direction, and except like a brother who's also looking up in this direction, which kind of, you know, aligns them for me. And this is, you know, a coincidence in a way, partly. But I've noticed as I've gone along, other photographs too, they're both on the outside. And she considered, you know, she felt like an outsider in the family, and he sort of parented her. And she told me stories about him. From the time I was really little, I heard stories about how he would read a story to her from beginning to a book from cover to cover late into the night so she could finish a book report that she was just, you know, anxious about, or that he taught her to ride a bicycle, he taught her how to play tennis. She told me lots of poignant stories about how he parented her, really. He was several years older, and she felt like an outsider in her family. Her political views were very different. The way she just interprets simple everyday things was very different from the rest of the family. So I think of this as her putting herself at the center, you know, she's putting herself at the center of the family album, maybe to sort of offset how she felt in her family. She's putting herself at the center of this sort of supportive family, an extended family. She puts in pictures of a lot of friends.
It's almost a portrait.
It's a portrait of her, really, yeah.
I mean, that one.
Oh, yeah, that looked like an art
photograph.
Yeah. So she doesn't, I like to think of the friends as sort of her extended family, where she got a lot of support too.
A painting, I guess.
And so this is her brother Lloyd going off to in his blue uniform. Picture with family members there. Here she is with her sister. I was looking at this album with her before I left, and she said, that wasn't my idea, to make formal gowns exactly the same. That was my sister's idea. Here they look, you know, fine. But she actually her sister was a real rival with her, because she came 18 months later, and on the first day of school, let's see, she was a year ahead of her in school, but on the sister's first day of school, she had these beautiful ringlets, beautiful hair, and everyone wanted to hold her hand and walk up to school with her. And my mother remembers vividly being alone and watching her sister go off up the sidewalk, and everyone hovered around her sister. So she said, this wasn't my idea. there she is the three pictures on the left of my mother. Easter 43. Let's see. And that's that. Our last party and our last picture of the game. While in school, I collected lots of pictures of pals and pen pals. They follow. This one on the left is pictures of a come-as-you-are party that she had, where she called friends at moments when they would probably not be in pajamas or something like that, and then come together for a party. So here she is up in the upper right, and then friends' photographs. This is a special friend here. They're all kids I'll have fun remembering. Now for some pictures with lots of memories. I sure don't want to forget them. And this is her parents. And you recognize the shape of the shadows. 1941. And this is the last family photograph of them all together before Lloyd went to fly in the Air Force. And here she is on this end, and here he is on that end. They're both on the outer edges of the family. And here he is actually putting his bag in the car.
I heard a comment before about the narrative in the photo of
how much text there is? Really, no, your interpretation of it? Is really formed partly by how much text there is, and actually her text runs is very different from my text. I mean, her text is, I'll have fun remembering, you know, and mine is, I'm seeing much more of a sense of loss and stuff. And
just, I guess I'm struck by the fact that that era was a very troubled time in the country.
My two oldest sisters are the same age as this, so that's kind of my era too.
Well, yeah, a lot of these men were killed in the war. This is the picture, the last picture he sent home, and it can't be the end of a roll of film, so this is just cut off. But on this page, when I was making the slide, I didn't realize it until afterwards, that on this page she put his photograph here and then a large portrait of herself here, smiling. And that was, then he was reported missing in action after that. And she has a few other photographs of her with friends, and then there's a huge gap. And in the on the last page of the album after this gap, is a photograph of my father. Let's see.
Well, my brother was killed about that same time too. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, that's what we have in the family. Mm-hmm. It's surprising.
And that gap has so much, I mean, the gap is partly because she got married to my father and they started taking slides.
Yeah.
And for me, that gap means, you know, it's like the end of an era for her. My father's photograph was just slipped under another photograph. It wasn't put into the album. And the marriage was very difficult. It ended badly. As a child of that marriage, I find that the blank pages after this are really loaded. I mean, they signify the end of her, of a lot of her hopes, her desires, her innocence, her trust. And a lot of the young men pictured in the album died in World War II. And it represents the time between the two world wars. It becomes a really an indictment of war for me to see all that loss in the album. But my interpretation of the album is really different from my mother's, and she has the stories that flesh out each picture that I don't have, and I'll have to try to get her to talk about it more and learn more about it. I have the sort of pop psychology kind of our generation that I overlay onto the album, that her parents would just be appalled at. I'm sure their stories would be completely different. So I guess one of the points I want to make is that the photograph is mute. You know, it does not really tell us a story or speak to us. In a way, it can't. The meaning is always changing, depending on who's telling the story. It can always be analyzed from different points of view, and we invent the stories around the album, and in a sense, invent our own lives, invent our identities that way. A photographer named Esther Parada wrote that the past is woven into the fabric of the present, genetically, psychologically, optically, and is transformed beyond recovery. Her interpretation of this album will be gone at some point. The pictures don't change at all, but the stories that we tell about them change. The pictures we've heard told about, that we have access to, are our access to family history, and they give us a perspective, they give us empathy for family members. My empathy for my mother grew a lot looking at this very closely. I took that picture of my uncle for granted. I heard the stories enough so that I kind of took it for granted. But then when I looked at this and saw 1943, that was just 10 years before I was born that she experienced all this. It just, you know, struck me a completely new way. Your album can be proof for, you know, a lot of different inventions or stories. Like, it can be proof that this uncle was mean, and it can be proof, you might be able to see clues that a child was abused at a certain point in their life, but it's just one interpretation. The family album can also be completely in conflict with our feelings about what went on in our family life. Just like her text is sort of in conflict with my reading of it, with the exclamation points, and it'll be fun remembering. We can look at a family picture and say, hey, I'm grinning there, and I look so happy. Why doesn't my memory of that time in my life jive with this picture of it? And when a photograph replaces memory, it can act as a block to remembering. And telling about traumatic events in your past, it can all look sort of bland and wonderful and nice in a family album. and it really conflict with your inklings about what happened and stop the process of healing that can come from telling the story and thinking about the courage to heal, or women telling about their experience of sexual abuse where, you know, memory is blocked, and family album can act as even further block. It can also open things up though.
Can you say more about that, that it can act as a block? Are you saying that you see it as maybe imposing that a different picture of what was going on, mm-hmm. to further deny the reality of someone?
Right. Yeah, you can use it to continue denial, really. You can say, I look happy here. I can't have happened to me. There can also, the family album is used a lot in therapy too, though, to be able to pinpoint when abuse happened because of the way someone looks changes drastically at one point in the album or something. But it can be a very bland sort of, you know, telling of it. One thing that really struck me that when I was reading the family album is this. Is some writing by Simon Watney, who was a gay man living in Britain who was looking at photos from his early childhood. He says, what amazes me is this simple fact. The child is me, and I look fine. A little boy just like millions of other little English boys in the mid-1950s. Yet I'm shocked to discover that the picture reveals nothing of the terrible secret that drove me so deeply into myself for so many long, irrecoverable years. Years that without photographs do not exist. He writes that many people will have memories of this order, memories that signal some kind of dysfunction between one's sense of oneself and one's parents' expectations. That it's the parents' vision, and often, you know, the mother, whether consciously or not, will want to appear as the good mother. And I edit out, you know, that doesn't look happy there. Throw it out. I'm edit out pictures that way. He says that gay children are particularly vulnerable to their parents' fantasies about who they are, fantasies that invariably fail us. How is a child to learn that he is perfectly okay as he is? Who prepares parents for the entirely predictable and intrinsically unremarkable fact that their children may well grow up gay? Like many other gay men, I am acutely aware of the moment when I realized that I was not the nice little boy in the holiday snaps, and that a deception was being perpetuated. Yet it was me who felt like the deceiver rather than my parents' image of me. Let's see. Well, what I'd like to do is talk with you about your family albums and see if this has brought up any ideas for you or insights. But I'm going to be showing, the next time I talk, I'm going to be showing some work by artists who are delving further into the family album, who try to sort of fill in some of the gaps, try to understand social and political and psychological implications of it, and ask questions about how the album contributes to the construction of our identities and, you know, gender identification and everything. What does the family album leave out? How can we make a more complete picture? There will always be one version of family life, but how can we transcend some of the conventions, some of the gaps that exist in the family album? How are photographs being used in therapy? This is an example of, this last picture is a picture from a series of pictures by Judith Black, who uses self-portraiture too. She puts herself in the picture with her children. And this is an example of one of the things I show. Giving birth is just the beginning. Women speak about mothering, where the photographs include text that really fill out the picture. And there are some women in England who are working on phototherapy that I'm going to talk about too. They reenact in the family album, or, you know, what influences there were on them as a child.
Even taking like a facial expression of that.
Right. She acts out her father and her mother. She acts out herself as a child. And it's based on reevaluation counseling or peer counseling, where, you know, two people will counsel each. There's no professional involved, but they counsel each other. So it's sort of a springboard of what point we're taking off and talking about issues in childhood. So I see the album as, you know, it can be a lie, a family lie. And it also can be a rich source of memory, of empathy,
of transformation. And the gaps and the silences in the family album, what's left out, can sort of force us to reach for, to fill in, and to reclaim part of ourselves by really scrutinizing it. Another thing I'm interested in is how video will change all this. And it's you know, I think we take it even as more of a window, more transparent than a photograph. And there's narration often that fills, you know, it doesn't leave any gaps for us to sort of interpret and fill in gaps. So is it going to be even a more constricting vision of our childhood, or is it going to, you know, I don't know how it's going to change the way we, you know, look at the past. You know, will it pacify us, sort of like TV kind of hypnotize, you know, pacifies you so you just accept it?
It's going to stay in the cassette.
Yeah, it may not be the act of looking.
Well, like family
through.
Movies.
Yeah.
How the family movies are taken in the early seasons.
Yeah, that's true. It may be.
The question is it photography?
Is it photography?
So that's the other question. Is it cool photography?
Well, I think it's functioning as photography is functioning, I think. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it has that same art potential as photography.
Well, there are a lot of artists using, in fact, the work I'm going to show on Saturday, I did make a video. Some of the work I'm going to show on Saturday is a videotape that I sort of distilled several hours of film and onto video of the first year of my son's life. And so it can be, I mean, it can. I don't know, does anyone else have thoughts?
Well, I think it would take the person who's actually using the video and presents it, just like you said, editing, and mm-hmm. and to use it in an art form,
yeah.
that they consider an art form, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, I tend to stick with the camera too, and not the video purposely for that reason, but I believe they would show a different side of that,
mm-hmm.
the people who are really users.
Well, maybe I think about the technology issue that from my parents' childhood, I don't have very many photographs. Mm-hmm. Especially from my dad's, because he came from a quite poor family.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about being a charity case, so he never had Novocaine when he went to the dentist. So I mean, for me, one of the most vivid images of being poor.
Yeah.
So there aren't very many photographs, and there's certainly no album. There are just a few.
Mm-hmm.
And from my childhood, there's an album, and there are movies, you know, but those black and white photographs that my father took of me, and there are lots of pages where it's clear that he took a whole roll, you know, and here's Dean with the top, and here's Dean with the rocking horse, and here's Dean standing up, and here's Dean sitting down, you know, it was just, you know, and of course we did that with Thomas, where his birth brother said, oh, I want ones like mine. I want a whole roll of Thomas. But, and then we can make a page, but with the slides that we take and the video we take, the technology is such that we won't have a book.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have something else. We have a drawer of slides.
Yeah.
We have, like you say, cassettes in a plastic container, so that the technology is not just in what images there are, but what you can do with
right.
the images.
Yeah, how they'll function
right.
in the future.
And also that how many you have is also important. The one I have of my dad's childhood, he came from a family of 7 boys. 5 are now living. One died, the one closest to him in age, died in a fire, a grass fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the oldest one was killed in a car accident. He had 3 children. So him, I kind of know about in a way, because there are those children and his wife. But Carl, about all, I think I only heard of him when I got caught playing with matches. It's the only time I ever heard that he had ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see this picture, and there's Carl in that picture, was, you know, as you say, it was very moving, and it made that family real
mm-hmm.
in a way that was never real to me before, to see all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there can be such great purpose in putting old pictures together or slides to do like a family story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the storytelling that goes with it, maybe a different kind of an art form, can be real special. I chose to take pictures of the old family album pictures and put on slide for my parents' 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And it told their story from their babyhood until the present moment. And it did a lot for me. And I've never seen such expression of awe on my parents' face, because it was totally a surprise, and it was shared with the folks that came to celebrate. Right? They were speechless, and especially my dad, who was not able to always express himself all that well. It was like a significance to his life that I will always truly be grateful for, because he died shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, you know, it was like his life was portrayed in a way that maybe he struggled to know in terms of the significance. But the part that I struggle with in picture taking, on the other hand, is my mother is always with her camera to ad nauseum. And one of the reasons I came here today is because I'm going back to visit, and I know she's going to have that camera, and it's just every other time you turn around, and it is invasive. And it's also a substitute for living, and it's a substitute for relationship, and it angers me so much, and yet I kind of go along with it, and by golly, if I don't find myself then taking pictures. You know, it's like, for all that you protest, you pick up that same old thing, like, you know, like somehow you can hang on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love the way you have just portrayed the possibilities and ways to look at these pictures. And I also wrestle with this other invasive part,
mm-hmm.
that is in place of the experience of really talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
and living in the moment.
Yeah, my sister was married last spring, and she struggled with the whole idea of video at the wedding. My brother was really into video, her in-laws were really into video, and they said, please do not videotape this event. I want you to be there, I want you to be present. Maybe there's some way of gently saying, you know, I want you to be present without, you know, without being, when you're the recorder of the event, you can't be involved in it. And my brother didn't videotape the service, and then into the reception, it was sort of like, well, now can I? And at one point he started taping. He was off, he was way down, way away from the group, videotaping with a telephoto lens, you know? And it was so clear that he was just separate from it and wasn't present there. And I'm not, and, you know, Em was glad that she had asserted herself, you know, to a certain point. But it was difficult for her to do. To say, you know, please don't, because it was something that they really wanted to begin with.
Something I did for our children, we have three, and I always give them a gag gift for Christmas. And 2 years ago, I boxed up all the pictures of the three of them and made some duplicates where there weren't duplicates, and I gave them for Christmas. And now they're going to tell their story. Of that. Uh-huh. That's why I didn't want to put it in an album,
uh-huh.
because it would be my story, mm-hmm. and I just felt that it was their life, and I wanted them to have it to see, to come from them, if they could remember what happened at this time or that time,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's one of the things I thought of, mm-hmm. and that it's different, I know, than most parents. Put them all in an album.
Yeah.
Well, I felt that I wouldn't put them in the right place or at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just gave that to them.
That's
and they're very, very thankful for it.
So they can edit and they can put it in the order that they mm-hmm. want.
That's
just a post.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, I have to think along what I can do along that line, but that's an interesting approach.
Yeah.
What I've done is have this horrendous number of photographs over time. So I've separated them into categories.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, my daughter is 22, my son is 24. And when they got to that age, I went all through all the photos and put mm-hmm. them in their particular album. Now they have those particular mm-hmm. albums. And they enjoy that, seeing themselves from mm-hmm. baby on.
I just thought it would give them some yeah. sense of growing up, some sense of where they were coming from.
Sure.
You can define themselves.
Yeah. Uh-huh. One thing, we went to Norway a few years back and we went to see monks' paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very disappointed. This man, just paintings as large as these walls, of people who are ill. Almost every portrait had people who were ill, people who were dying. And I bought 3 postcards. One was a picture of his sister, and then 2 others were of still life that he painted. And I just wondered, you know, now in the photography, what, you know, we could figure out that this man was really hurt in his lifetime, because that's all he painted, was just horrible pictures of death and illness and tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And we never see that in photos.
Right.
Very few photos that you see. Mm-hmm. Pictures of people who are of death are very few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's one of the, you know, that's one of the huge gaps. And that's one of the things that Joe Spence, who's one of the photographers we'll show next time, challenges. Why don't we have pictures of illness, of divorce, and she tries to include those pictures in her own autobiography. Mm-hmm.
Sally Mann has some photos of her kids right after they've been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that picture of her son with this really bloody nose and her daughter getting some stitches.
She said, yeah, most mothers run to clean up the mess and
she runs to get the camera. Right?
Yeah, she took the camera to the hospital when she died.
But it's interesting because I was thinking about that. My son, both of my sons just this spring, one broke his arm and one got a big gash on his leg that required stitches. And my husband and I were talking about how when they have these big physical events that happen in their lives, their memory sort of starts and stops again at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually having a photograph of it would be, I think it would be something that they would be very interested in having, a photograph of the broken arm, which of course I don't have because we're going to the hospital. But since I'm sure that his, you know, he will see his young childhood as either side of that event, and it would be nice to have.
It's so interesting. Last week my son fell and hit his head on a brick, and so we went and got taped together. So we came home and he got that taped together, and he also got, for the first time, his own bowl of ice cream. And I sat him down and took, you know, I said to his dad, now take a picture. I would have a picture of this with that thing on his forehead, because it's the first time that blood came gushing out. I think we need to have a picture of this. But with the bowl of ice cream. So, yeah, both together.
It's interesting, sometimes those photos that you take, though, are so powerful you almost can't touch them.
Right.
We had a dog, you know, a family dog for many years, and he was hit by a car, and we knew that the next day was the end of the dog's life. We would have to care for him and put him to sleep. And so we took photos. And those photos are so powerful that we can't include them in the album. And they're stuck in the pigeonhole, the roll top desk. And every once in a while, you accidentally look at them. And it just is so powerful that you have to put them back. It's almost like you invaded a moment that was too precious to record on.
Also, that you were asked that question about text in the album, that one of the things that's so powerful about the photographs is that they don't have text. And so there's a little more multivalence, I guess is the word, to the picture. Like you say, you come back to it and it looks different later. Of course, that happens with words. But it seems to me that an image allows it to happen more. And consequently, it also can kind of get under our words, under our rationality in a way that often, even a family story that's repeated over and over, doesn't. It can surprise you.
And your viewing changes with time.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the one of your child with the ice cream, you know, and he's 6, and then he's 10 and 12, and you look in a certain way, and then when your child becomes 20 and you look back, those happy photographs are happy, sad photographs. Takes a whole new perspective as you look at it. I'm sure each time you review the photos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has a lot to do, too, I think, with
that if the person taking the picture is truly mindfully present, or if it's just mindlessly, you know, snap, 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 line up, let's get this, let's get that. When you're really mindfully wanting to record an event, you're in touch with the people. And that's really different than just the objects out there that I want to make sure to hold. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a way of possessing something that isn't yours to possess.
Mm-hmm. Or a genealogy.
A record that, you know, there's much to be said for that. And I think a mindful way of recording is much more tedious. But when I look at pictures, I'm shocked to think of how, like you're talking about recording pictures of illness or injury. Well, if you're mindfully doing that for a purpose, I can see. But I also can see where it's almost like one more token to collect. And the kind of message that communicates, what's the purpose of this kind of thing?
The piece that attracts me to the photo album, the family album, is that we take pictures at good times. Mm-hmm. And whenever I take pictures all the time, whenever I point the camera, I'm always getting this go away, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Type of thing where, you know, when people don't want their photograph taken, you know, they just say they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
My 13-year-old, or 12, almost 13-year-old boy, for the last year, ducks his head or runs out of the way when the camera. Yet, we set ourselves up to look at the bad side of life. I mean, the front pages of our newspapers record man's horrible things, and the sports pages record their accomplishments. And it's literally like, that's what our family albums are like, they're all good things.
When you talk about what a photograph is, it reminds me of that thing that happens when you travel in other countries. Often you're told, especially I remember being told in Hong Kong, don't take pictures of people on the street, because especially old people are afraid that you steal their spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That they have this sense that you can somehow get the self.
Right.
A totally different view, but I think it would be interesting to put that against what we do with family photography. Mm-hmm. In a way, we are trying often to capture the person,
mm-hmm.
Not in a way that will rob them of it, but a way that will preserve it and somehow make it available to us. And I think that's partly my experience with this photograph of my father's family. Or there's a now lost photograph my mother saw of her grandfather in a big family group. And she said it looked exactly like my brother. His long hair and his beard. Not just the facial structure, but the sort of way my brother looks,
mm-hmm.
with his, you know, the things he has chosen, as well as the things that he hasn't, which made this connection that would never have been there across all those generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my mother thinks it's a great tragedy that she didn't take that picture when she saw it,
mm-hmm.
because then her aunt died, and no one can buy the picture again.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's a sort of taking hold of
mm-hmm.
persons.
Yeah, in a way, though, it is, you know, it is the good times,
yeah,
but only,
and
that is taking something away. I mean, it is narrow, you know, it's a narrow view.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And
I want to share something that we're doing that puts the two of them together that is not my own idea, but has
mm-hmm.
been very important to my family. Someone told me of parents long ago where the man decided that every wedding anniversary there would be a portrait taken of husband and wife. And so that was done for 50 years. So there are 50 photographs of the years. And I thought, oh, that is incredible. I would start that now. And then with it, I'm not good at journaling. I forget. So someone told me to stick up a piece of paper at the beginning of the year, on New Year's Day, and then just write the events of the year as they go. So it's stuck like on a cupboard door.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever wants to can record what happens. Well, you do record the good and you do record the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then those pictures in an album are exclusive. I mean, I don't put those with all other photos. It's just one book all by itself. And I've only done that for 3 years. And my father died no, my child was married. It just becomes a real powerful review. And I didn't realize.
You don't juxtapose it with the photograph, though?
Well, yes, the photograph. You do. The family, a family photograph. And the page, I thought, well, maybe I should take a photocopy of the page so it looks nice and clean. Because you can imagine after a year of being on the cupboard, it gets quite kind of ratty. But it's too precious. You can't throw it away because it's been a whole year, so it's a ratty piece of paper.
What are the ethics of selling the unit? She's had some real controversy about the setup. You know, is it really commercialism versus a mother capturing spirits and visions?
Well, I think it's really, if she violates some boundaries, I think. And I think they are collaborating with her, but they're too young to choose to collaborate with her. You know, they're too young to be able to make a choice because their boundaries aren't clear yet. I really wouldn't want her work to be censored. I think, you know, that I wouldn't advocate censorship, but I think, you know, or not allowing her to do this work, but I think looking at it critically and seeing how, you know, where are the boundaries here, and this is the work of, I have the book if anyone's interested in Sally Mann's photographs of the kids. They model for her, they work for her. She uses an 8x10 view camera, so she's under a dark cloth and setting up a photograph and asking them to, you know, move an arm, you know, stick out a hip this way, move an arm that way, and setting up the photographs. They're not, you know, candid photographs of the children. So I think there are issues there. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I can't say that she shouldn't do it, because I think it lets us in on such a complex view of a family's emotional life that it's important. But there are some images in here which I think just go over the line.
Well, artists have not always found favor with everyone.
That's true. I think it's important. I mean, there are people that would, the FBI had investigated her, I think. You know, and looked at her pictures.
Yeah.
For a child.
And so people just say, no, freedom of expression, no censorship. And they just stop there and they don't look critically at what she's doing. Or we take the family album so much for granted that we don't, you know, look critically at how it functions.
Because that focuses on children. And there is, I think, such concern with the violation and the abuse of children. I think that probably is a very good question to ask, because a child is so much more vulnerable and can be used as an object versus a consenting adult that says, yes, I want to participate in that.
Mm-hmm. But are these any different than the child who plays the baby in Exorcist or in the other stuff that was paid 7 to 10
That's very,
yeah,
it's a
similar. I mean, I really felt the book was a picture of Sally Mann.
Yeah, I think she's
what she is, not necessarily the children. Yeah. Those pictures are her result of Sally Mann.
Mm-hmm.
You
know. And my work, I mean, the one reason I'm so, you know, compelled by this work and the questions about it is that in my own work, I'm trying to show my experience, but I am using the pictures of my children to do it. And I'm wondering, you know, people always say, well, how are your kids going to feel about this when they're older? And I thought, well, it's a labor of love, you know. It couldn't be a violation, and yet I'm wondering. I know it's a projection. I'm projecting part of my own childhood onto them when I make those pictures.
The reason I raise the issue is when, in fact, my children say, "No, take your picture, turn your head," or my wife says, "Get away from me with that camera." Mm-hmm. You know, am I in fact violating your rights?
Well, I think you just need to respect that. And, you know, might make a very interesting photograph of your son turning away, you know, but that would be for you a record of what it was like. It'll be for him a way of getting at maybe how he felt as an adolescent. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, should you disrespect his wish?
I guess that's choices we have to make.
In the pictures by Judy Black that I showed one slide, they all look very serious and very solemn. She looks exhausted most of the time in her pictures. And my students just, you know, at first they just say, oh, they look so unhappy, they look so depressed, how can she, you know, show these pictures to the public? And, you know, and I have to say, well,
what is your experience of family pictures? It's all,
yeah,
you know, everybody smiling. And how much of your lifetime with your family did you spend like this?
It's interesting, some things that she was saying, oh, about her mother always having a camera. My mother and my sisters and I, we don't have a, it's not a happy family. But my mother always wants to photograph a happy family. And so she's always insisting that everybody look at the camera and everybody smile. And I find myself never wanting to look at the camera. I have to force myself to do it, because what I want to do is be like the way your mother was, the pictures be turning away and have them over there. But it's so important to my mother, I think, because she's in so much denial of all the problems, to have this record. We were happy. See, I have the photos of it, I have the proof. Everybody was smiling. What do you mean you were unhappy? It didn't, you know.
It's just
the other observation that I think it struck me is that the era of the 620 film and the 120 film was 8 pictures and 12 pictures. With today, you know, we stick ourselves with leaving film in the camera, which I am not guilty of. If I take 5 pictures and I want them, off they go. And I buy film in 8 and 12, 35 millimeter packs if I put my hands on them. But we do, in fact, leave film in the camera till it's all used. I think there's a real difference of what we wind up with. So 620 films is really great to work.
Just take more. Take more.
You consider much more, each picture much more. And yeah, we get, one thing we do get from these, you know, like when you take a lot of pictures in succession, you get these fragments, the sort of abstract views that you can really read into. But the quantity becomes, the quantity of images just becomes overwhelming.
I collect cameras and family albums that you see, and I have one from a young lady in Somerville, New Jersey, that was kept from the time she was 10 until she was 23, and every photograph is narrative. Under every one, printed in this perfect penmanship, is a line or two, and we've begun the search to see if we can find her family. And these are all taken in the 40s and 50s. She's about 55, she's probably like 25, 28 years old. And the album, there's 7 blank pages after that, so there's just a what's the rest of the story here?
Talking about documenting and logging. My husband's cousin has documented every day of their marriage, which is about 52 years now. They have 8 children. They have, and every night they write in this, in their journal, and they have all of this that they have done. They're ranchers, so the temperature, who came that day, and the biggest thing, and all their 8 children, except one, live in Sydney, Montana. And that we went through last year, and there wasn't one day out of 4 that there weren't at least 4 children that visited the home. And they're Jandy, their grandchildren, and it was just, but I said, what a legacy. And they photographed